South African party is well and truly underway. The Springboks have returned home as world champions, greeted by thousands of roaring, screaming fans at OR Tambo this morning / afternoon. All three tiers at the international airport overflowing, really, and it was just incredible to see. Herman Mostert, we woke up this morning and we had a little lull, I suppose, from the weekend until now, just a brief little break while the Boks were in the air. And, you know, we were thinking if we were naive enough, we thought it might be over. But gee whiz, I mean, South Africans are out and about now, and it's set to be a rocking week.
Yeah, look, I don't think anyone of us thought how big it was going to be. And we saw just now with that reaction that we saw at the airport. I mean,
yeah,
people just there in their thousands, and they went absolutely ballistic when Kolisi appeared there with the trophy, in his hands and hoisting it aloft again. So yeah, I think this feels bigger than 2019 was, you know. So
I was wondering it does feel bigger than 2019, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder if it's that we've just forgotten because it's so long ago and we're just getting old. But it does feel that way. I mean, it was rock star stuff, you know, Sia jumping out there.
It's a bit like a Rocky movie almost.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, geez, what a reception he got. One of our guys was there. Simkiwe Abanisa was on the ground at the airport. Sim, it sounded very, very loud through the television coverage. What was that like?
It was absolutely insane. Like, obviously, being a man in his 40s, those days are probably a little bit past for me of liking very loud places. But it was absolutely insane. It was like sort of a cross between a political rally and basically kids out on a street bash, basically. And then on the outside, you know, basically where the cars come and drop off people to come into the airport and stuff like that, you just had these motorcycles parked as if, remember those Harley Davidson at the Cheetah Stadium in Bloemfontein that welcomed to all that noise. And you had a guy just revving it the whole time. It was absolutely insane. You know what? I kept asking the one question, man. It's like, hang on, wait. Aren't these people working today? And they kids, aren't they supposed to be at school?
And no one cares about matric exams.
Exactly.
Sim, you said a couple of people. I mean, geez, how early were people getting there this morning? You bumped into one or two that actually stayed overnight.
That's a thing. I mean, there were people who say they got there at half past 7 last night. To give it context in terms of how long they waited, the Boks got there probably at about 11 a.m. and then finally sort of worked their way through probably at about between 11:15 and half past. So essentially those people would have waited, basically like 17 hours just to see them. And you know, the scary thing in a situation like that with that many people, thousands, absolute thousands, just throngs, is that you probably don't even, you know, if you don't position yourself in the right place, you probably don't get a chance to actually even catch a glimpse of these guys.
Yeah.
So it's quite an undertaking. I mean, I've heard of people, you know, sleeping over, you know, to get a ticket to get into a place, but just to catch a glimpse of, you know, guys that are just, you know, blurry eyed, just got off the, you know, like an overnight flight and basically, you know, just desperate to get home. Mm. I think that speaks volumes in terms of, just how much these guys, you know, the Springboks mean to, you know, to their public.
Yeah, it went by very quickly, like you say. But I got the sense that, you know, this meant as much, this moment of, you know, coming together, because they've been away for, you know, the longest time now, 7 weeks in France, the weeks before that, all of the build-up, they've been away from home for a long time. And this coming together, this opportunity to come and bring this trophy back to South Africans, the way Sia ran out there, almost sprinted out into the masses through the arrivals sliding door, it felt like this meant as much to him as it did to anyone who had waited hours and hours and hours to see him.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you've got a choice when they say, you know, they do this for us, you know, as a country. The choice you have is to believe them or not to believe them. When he runs out like that, then I think you don't have a choice but to believe him, simply because, you know, at long last he gets to see the people he's been doing it for.
Yeah.
Yes, they got, you know, they got their flowers at the Stade de France, you know, after, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the final, you know, they were congratulated, but it's not quite the same, is it? You know, it's not quite your people, if you want to put it that. You know, it's a handful of your people that could make the trip, but when you come out here, it's, you know, it's who it's really about. And so these guys are probably excited. You guys have flown overseas. You know how it is. One of the most special things that's going to happen to you when you get back home is that touch of the wheels on sort of South African, and to be more specific, African tarmac, where you know, like, okay, I'm home now. You know, I imagine, you know, it's no different with the players. They feel exactly the same thing. And, of course, I think maybe what fuels the excitement even more is, you know, the magnitude of what they've done. You know, it's one thing to come back having won a World Cup 12 years after the last, but to have, you know, not only defended it, but to have defended it the way they did, because they had to fight so hard. They were put through to literally an inch, you know, that inch being represented obviously by the points win over the knockout stages. They were put through within an inch of their lives each time, and each time they wanted it so much so that they could deliver it to these people. So it's nice to see that many people come out and that many people, you know, wait for that long, you know, just for a glimpse of these guys.
Yeah, and it's only the beginning. As we know, there's a trophy tour planned for the rest of the week that, according to the SA Rugby statement, gets underway on Thursday. There'll be four legs to this trophy tour, if the statement is correct at this stage. Things do change, obviously, but at this stage, Thursday will start in the hub of Gauteng, where they will go to Johannesburg, Soweto, and Pretoria. Then Friday is Cape Town, Saturday is Durban, and Sunday is East London. So trying to get to as many of the hubs as they can, acknowledging today that it would be great to get to all nine provinces. It's just simply not doable at this stage. These players have to get back to their clubs. They have to start rehab. I mean, there's this international club competition that has started already. So the Boks came home with the World Cup, but they also came home with the Cranberries Zombie, which is now the Cranberries Russi. And there was a moment today where that song found its way into the halls of O.R. Tambo again. I mean, what was that like? That sounded like it was also quite a moment.
I was actually standing there and thinking, hang on, wait, did we appropriate the same song that was used to troll us, you know, in that game against Ireland? You know, you're sitting there and, you know, when I think back to that song, obviously, I mean, I've loved the song for years, you know, like most people who are into their music. But, you know, the memory that you get now as a rugby fan is that poor guy that was sitting there in the middle of all those Irish fans when they were playing Zombie after the Boks had just lost to Ireland in the group stages. And, you know, he wouldn't bat an eyelid. He just, you know, he remained quite calm under pressure. He didn't crack. And to think now that we've somehow managed to appropriate that song, and it's now, you know, part of the lexicon of South African celebration. If ever you wanted proof for just, you know, what this victory has done in terms of like the impossible that it's managed, you have to look at, you know, our appropriation of that song and think, hang on, wait, we didn't do that, did we?
On a more serious note, Sim, I've got the strong kind of feeling from Sia's messages, both in France and once he returned. I mean, the pitch side interview after the official post-match with Mochadisi Mohono, where he said, you know, listen, guys, made a strong point of saying, let's not let this be a celebration that just kind of dies after a week. Let's really focus on making this one a long-lasting legacy type of mission. The way South Africa is now, the way we are celebrating together now, the way we've come together to this World Cup now, let that be the long-lasting legacy of what this team has achieved, calling on South Africans to extend this moment of unity to beyond the 1 week of celebration. That was very much, again, the message as he sat down and addressed media today, flanked by SA President Mark Alexander, Sports Minister Zizi Kodwa. Before a question is even asked, Sia goes, sorry, do you guys just mind if I say something? And he delivers this powerful message again, where he says, listen, this is great. what we've achieved over the last 7 weeks is fantastic. Thank you all for being with us on this journey. But this time, guys, we need to make sure that it lasts longer than just a week or two of celebration. I mean, powerful words from Sia.
Before I answer that, one of the things for me I marvel at is the sheer growth of this guy. You know, in 2018, I know that in 2017 he had the opportunity to become captain, but Alistair went another direction in choosing his good mate Eben Etzebeth to do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Sia finally got it, and you know, he made it quite clear that, you know, he was learning on the job, and you know, he lent on his teammates and, you know, his experienced teammates to make sure that it happens. But now he's just graduated into a space where, you know, he does exactly what you said just now, which is, you know, even before a question has been asked, he's come with a message, as opposed to, you know, he's just here for whatever questions he might be asked. You know, he's got a message to read out into, you know, to the South African public. It's almost like, you know, today he was using, you know, that throng of people as a changing room to pull people together, you know, when you're just about to go out into a game. You know, obviously the contents of his message, it's so accurate for him to sort of flag it, because if you look at all our World Cup wins from before, you know, one thing that's happened is, you know, you spoke about the trophy tour, you know, the ticker tape parade, you know, the open top buses. One of the things that has happened is, you know, before those buses have even sort of receded into the distance, you know, we're already going back into our little silos, into our little corners, you know, sort of pointing fingers at one another as a country. You know, we've got a team here that has shown what can be done. You know, these guys don't profess that their results will change our lives in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
But what they are saying is, by trying to be best at what it is that you do. And the really wonderful thing about rugby is, you know, everyone who's played it knows that I have to play my role for the team to succeed, because there's only like 15 of us at a time. And so we all have to play our role. And so that's what these guys have done so well. Of course, they've, you know, kind of graduated it not only to 23 in terms of the match day squad, but also to 33 in terms of the whole squad that is there.
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, that's the message. The message is, when you work together as South Africans, you know, we've got our challenges. I mean, we're not going to lie. We've got our challenges, but when we work together, this is what could happen. And it's a message worth reiterating, because we're more than happy to have a song and dance, like I was describing a bit earlier. You know, we have our political rally, we have our sort of street bash or whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, we'll kind of like slink away into our little corners, into our little lives that are a little less significant, and we stop trying. So I'm happy you said that, because it's happened the last three World Cups that we won. So it would be nice if we somehow found a way to keep it happening, or to keep it going, to keep making sure that, you know, we all try to play our roles. Obviously, we do different things, but, you know, we all have a role to play.
Yeah, it's impossible not to, in a moment like this, just stop and think about all of that and see his message. And when you see it, you know, when you actually see it, we always talk about Rainbow Nations and unity and coming together. But when you actually see it in a rare moment, like when the box come back with a World Cup trophy, it is something quite special. Sim, thanks so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to it. And I'll come back to Ham and Mostert in the studio, because we also had Jacques Nienaber in the press conference alongside Sia. And there were a couple of rugby matters that were discussed that I found quite interesting. The first one, and look, nobody said Sia was retiring. Sia never said he would retire after this World Cup, but there was always that question, you know, given the move coming up to France, he'll be joining Racing 92 now, and, you know, leaving the Sharks, meaning that he's now based in France playing his rugby there. He is 32 years old, and he's just won back-to-back Rugby World Cups. The legacy is solidified. What more can there be to achieve? So the question was raised, what does Sia Kolisi's international future look like? And he came out today and, you know, put those kind of fears to bed and said, no, I'm staying. I'm still here to play. I'm available for selection. I want to pull that jersey over my head. Whether I'm captain or not, I don't know. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter. I want to keep playing for the box. I mean, big news coming out of Sia there.
Yeah, look, luckily, I think it's something that we also need to commend Rassie on, probably, and trying to forcing, or not forcing, but trying to get SA Rugby to change their minds a few years back now, when, remember when they had that policy, when you go overseas, you can't play for the box. I mean, that is massive. We would not have won these two World Cups, the last two World Cups, if we weren't able to pick players that play overseas. And this is, this new rule obviously allows SIA to go and play in France now and still be available. But yeah, look, strong words from him. You know, it's almost like he can only go down from here. I mean, what more can you achieve? You know, he's going to be 36 by the time the next World Cup comes around.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if he's physically going to be able to
play. Especially given how they operate on cycles. We always think, you know, wherever possible, a four-year cycle kind of builds up to the World Cup. So you would think maybe potentially identify someone who you want to be your captain in 2027. And back that person up.
I mean, there's no British Lions tour in 2 years' time that he can maybe look forward to. Then again, I mean, you would think if he keeps playing that he would remain as the captain. I mean, he's been such an inspirational captain.
Yeah.
It would be weird having him in the team just as a player. I'm not sure if he would actually start, every match then if he's not the captain.
Yeah.
So. That's a bit of a tough one. Or maybe you can just look at it like, listen, I'm just playing until I can't play anymore. And it doesn't matter what year it is. If it's a year out or 2 years out from a World Cup, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just a test career. And if it ends, it ends, you know. At the moment, he's obviously still good enough and he's still young enough to be there. Or maybe they're looking at grooming a new captain under his guidance in a way. You know, Sim has spoken about... CR now going into a press conference and just shoving everyone else aside and saying, listen, I've got something to say, and starting the presser like that. There's no ways he would have done that 5 years ago.
No, there's certainly a confidence there now that wasn't there when he started.
So you can definitely see that in him, you know. So, I think maybe they can look at it in that way, sort of identify a new captain and sort of groom him, you know, along with CR, still part of the structures.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's probably what they have in mind. But
I mean, none of this has to happen immediately. Of course, there's still a long way to go before there is any international rugby, and a lot of celebrating to do in the coming days. So we don't want to jump the gun, but I mean, these are the questions we have already looking ahead to the future. And the other one, of course, is that Jacques Nienaber, you know, I mean, some very strong emotional, not generally an emotional guy, but quite a bit of emotion in his words today, you know, speaking about the privilege of having coached the box, about, you know, he thanked Mark Alexander and Rassi Erasmus. He says, you know, without some senior guys around the box camp, I'm just a physiotherapist from Bloemfontein. You know, that's all I am, really. And, you know, through the backing of a couple of senior guys, you know, he said, I'd love to be a fly on the wall when Rassi went to Mark Alexander and said, this is my new head coach. You know, this physiotherapist from Bloemfontein, who has never been the head coach of a rugby team before, is now going to be the head coach of the box. And, you know, it was a bold call to go Jacques when they did, and it's worked out. And now Jacques is obviously going, you know, and he was quite philosophical in the way he spoke about his departure, going, ah, you know, you never say never. It's just a 2-year journey, you know, it's a new chapter, but it's just 2 years. You never know what happens after that. Almost, you know, in a longing way, going, well, maybe I can come back one day, because I think it's been a very special time for him in his career as well. But then you do start asking the question, what comes next, you know, from a Buck coaching point of view, and whatever they do there will obviously impact, I would imagine, the captaincy decision too. You know, if Rassi's still involved, as he should be, but who will the new coaching group be? What will they want out of a captain? So a lot to still decide. Another interesting thing I found out of Jacques' address was speaking about how heartbroken he was to leave Marnie Lubbock out of the World Cup final. It sounded like out of all the decisions he had taken since Big Bock coach, that was one of the toughest ones because of what Marnie had done. But I mean, by the end of it all, you know, proved to be the right one because the box won.
Yeah, but it's interesting for me to hear about, obviously, he's spoken very highly of Marnie and how what a good year Marnie has had, and it was obviously very tough to leave him out of the team, and it was, he admitted Marnie was heartbroken that he couldn't play in the Rugby World Cup final. You know, you might never get that chance ever again. But then he quickly moved on to how Marnie reacted to the news, and he basically reacted to on Monday, obviously on the Monday, the players are already informed about what the team's going to be for the weekend. Marnie became Richie Mohunga.
Yeah.
In practice, he was the shadow guy that played against the starting team, and he became Richie Mohunga. He started studying Richie Mohunga, all these little nuances and intricacies that Mohinga has, and that obviously helped the team prepare in that way. You know, and that I guess obviously says a lot about the character of the team. He spoke about Marvin Aurier as well, who obviously didn't play a big part in this World Cup from a playing perspective, but he was right there training with the guys, being the next in line. He knew that if there was an injury, he was going to come in. And that just, I guess, speaks about the cohesion of the whole squad. And they keep hammering on about the fact that it wasn't a 15-man or even a 23-man thing. It was a 33-man squad. And even more than that, because obviously guys got injured and new players came in.
Yeah.
So, but it obviously speaks to the depth of the team. But I think it just shows that... Jock is the head coach, and there's obviously a lot of talk about Rassie still being involved. Sort of, a lot of people say, you know, Rassie's still actually the guy in charge.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter in the end, because it's a happy bunch of players and it's a happy squad. You know, every person in that squad knows what their role is and they know how they fit into it. And if all of them are happy, it doesn't matter who's in charge. Or it doesn't matter,
for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, I mean, that's a big part of the reason why they won is you can't have disunity in the group. I mean, look at the Wallabies. I mean, I'm telling you now that half of that team didn't want Eddie Jones as the coach. I mean, he went and dropped some senior players just before the World Cup, which didn't make any sense. And they went and they couldn't buy a win. They beat Georgia and Portugal was the other win that they had. So, I mean, that's the only matches they won the whole year. So it just shows you Eddie Jones is a very, very good coach. One of the best rugby coaches ever, but the guys aren't happy playing under him at the moment. And in this group that they have now, everyone is happy with their role, even if they're not at front and center of the attention. And I think that's important.
And it's transparency and it's inclusive kind of leadership and decision making. And, you know, it's a cliche to go, ah, it's a team game. And, you know, people will say that all the time, but there is really the feeling that holds true in this group. Yes, Marnie Lubbock was devastated to hear that he wouldn't be playing the final. Yes, he was heartbroken. Yes, he wanted to play a Rugby World Cup final. Dusted himself off and acknowledged very quickly that, you know, this is still my team. This is still my game to win. How do I now operate in the best way possible from this moment until the end of the weekend to ensure that we have the best shot at winning the game? Because at the end of it all, They've really stressed that this medal belongs to every single person, even the guys who weren't even in the squad, your Joseph Dwebas, you know, your guys who have been involved but didn't make the final 33. Everyone who's played a role in the preparation to get these players here, you know, deserves their kind of you know, appreciation for what they've done. We'll leave it there. It has been an incredible journey with this team that just amazes all the time. And another day today where they just rocked up, got home in South Africa, and just reminded us all how powerful a group they are. Congratulations again to Rassie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber, Sio Kolisi, and the rest of the team for, you know, obviously winning the Rugby World Cup, but again showing, you know, how powerful they are in uniting a country. Incredible scenes out of OR Tambo today, and no doubt incredible scenes will follow this team on their nationwide journey over the next few days as they take the Webb Ellis Cup to the different corners of South Africa. This once again has been the Inside Pass. Until next time, cheers.